Gambling Show with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
It's the Albany legislature here that's at fault, not the unions.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg on the John Gambling Show.
There's some things we have to have taxes for, and that's fine, but you just have to stand up and say some of these things we can't afford.
Now, with New York's only local news talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
It is that time on this nasty Friday in New York City. John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg here in Studio 4 on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Mr. Mayor, welcome aboard. Good morning.
Good morning, but I will accept your gratitude and thanks. If you look outside,
what have you done for me
we
now?
We are filling up the reservoirs as we speak.
Stop.
Well, you know, if we had a drought, you'd be the first one blaming the mayor.
Absolutely. It would be indeed the mayor's fault. There's no question about it. Speaking of water, while you're talking about water.
Yes, see the water we're going to have tomorrow, and maybe, and I don't know what the Mets are going to do, because they're going to get rained out here for
a couple
days.
Yeah, I guess somebody said they might do a doubleheader later in the weekend, maybe?
I plan to go on Sunday to the final regular season game, hopefully not the final game at Shea Stadium, but I don't know, if they get rained out for the next 2 days, they're going to have a lot of games to make up.
Yeah, that would be interesting, actually, to see them all kind of squished together. Maybe not fair when you're running for a pennant.
Have they ever played three games in Major League Baseball history on the same day?
I can't imagine, because they could run, you know, they can run sometimes 4 hours, 5 hours. That'd be an all-day event.
You mean like the All-Star game that at 1:30 in the morning? You know, I remember the one, I was talking about that the other night at Yankee Stadium, went to the last game there, which is sad, but exciting for a new stadium. But, and it was packed. Everybody really had a good attitude.
Hanging off the rafters.
Absolutely. But I was thinking, some of these games go late, and somebody said, well, how late? 1:30 for the All-Star game. And at 1:30, I was sort of hoping it'd keep going, because you were so tired, you might as well be there and set a new record. And what I never knew, but I discovered that night, was they have a 7-inning stretch. They also have a 14-inning stretch.
I was not aware that. I've never stayed for 14
neither have I before.
Is one longer than the other, or are they about the same?
No, they do that same dance, the guys,
up and down and around.
YMCA,
and
right.
To the water question, last week I've been holding this in my stack of stuff here. I saw that the city wants to take city water and, for emergency purposes, planning really, stick it in the aquifer on Long Island.
Well, the aquifer on Long Island is slowly being depleted. So you could put water in there and store it.
It's an interesting idea.
Yeah, it is an interesting idea. You know, supposing something happened to the conduits that came from upstate. About 10% of our water comes from east of the Hudson, about 90% to the west. The 10% from the east, we're under court order to filter. We don't do it yet, so we keep paying fines. But we are building in Van Cortlandt Park that new filtration plant under what used to be the driving range of Moshula Golf Course. And, it's an enormous hole in the ground. You look in there and you say, my goodness.
Gigantic project.
Just a big project. And actually, it's going to, because we saved $250 million by doing it there rather than up in Westchester, we said we'd spend an extra $250 million on parks in the Bronx, which is really going to make a difference in the Bronx. And we're trying to do that. But, when you stop and think, what could keep our city from being livable? Cut off the water. You just can't stay in a building because the fire department can't put out a fire. You can't bathe, or cook, or anything.
We use 1.1 billion gallons of water every day, I think. I read in the back of the New
York
Times.
Yeah, I mean, people say, well, truck
day.
It in. You can't truck it in.
Right.
It's like saying, how do you get everybody out of Manhattan in an hour? You can't.
The other thing is that when you get into sort of these bad scenarios, sort of these doomsday situations, quarantine, for example, if there was some sort of disease, how do you feed the city?
It is easier to move people out, I think, than keep them in. Can you imagine if the health people said, well, don't anybody leave the city because you got a bad disease and we don't want you to spread it? And people can say, hey, I don't have it yet. I want out.
We're not going to get into those. We have our own panic to deal with. Let's get into your reaction to what's taken place in the last 24 hours in Washington with the bailout non-bailout.
If somebody can explain to me what's happened in the last 24 hours, I would deeply appreciate it. I don't think part of it is politics. Congress is up for re-election, everybody in the House and one-third of the senators this coming
five weeks.
When you ask the public, do you want to bail out rich guys with taxpayers' money, the answer is no. That's not the question that we should be asking. The question is, what can you do to forget about why we're here? We can discuss that later. But what can you do to keep this system from stopping? And the municipal bond market has gotten very hard to sell bonds, and you have to do that for all throughout this country. The loan market for college loans, because all these are packaged and sold off. That's where the money comes from. Kids aren't going to be able to get loans for schools. Credit card debt. Automobile mortgage loans are packaged. Can you imagine what happens to Detroit if you can't get a car loan? There are people in the city. If you today went to your local bank and tried to get a mortgage on to buy a new house, I'm not so sure this week you could. You might. A handful, some still do, but in a macro sense, you cannot get a mortgage.
And does that have as much to do with the fact that the lenders don't know what's going on, so therefore they don't want to do anything?
John, these companies, not all of them, but a lot of them that are in real trouble or already gone out of business, were making money. It is a crisis of confidence. People don't want to leave their money with the slightest risk anyplace. So you're going to see, there was one guy this morning predicting 400 bank failures across the country. Small banks, people take their money out and move it to a big bank. And the FDIC that insures these small banks could easily run out of funds. And that's another bailout. You have people buying government bonds, treasury bills. The yields are, you know, under some cases up 1%, under 1%, slightly over 1%, because nobody wants to leave their money in a money market fund.
And speaking of money market funds, if indeed there is not a solution here or even a perceived solution here, you're going to have a run on these money markets where funds are just going to collapse.
You could. Last weekend, there was a real question as to what firms would be able to open on Monday morning. And fortunately, the Fed and the Treasury got together and they gave a couple of big firms, Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs, the ability to become banks. Not so much to take deposits and have corner branches, but to have access to borrowing from the Fed. And once they have access, then the theory is people, they don't need it because people don't think they're in trouble and aren't going to take their money out. But this is plain and simple a question of confidence in the system. And it's not just here. It's pervasive around the world. People are really getting scared. And you saw this morning, Washington Mutual, WaMu.
I was just going to ask you about that.
Taken over by the thrift regulators and sold the deposits and some of the branches to J.P. Morgan Chase. That's the largest bank failure we've ever had in this country.
But it had assets of $300 plus million.
But people were taking out, they had liabilities.
Right.
You know, equal to that. The problems here are that most of these companies, the securities that we're talking about, have real value. But nobody knows what that value is. It's hard to measure. They're moving targets. The underlying credits go, come and go. They're so complex that management, I think, lost track of what they really own. But if you just had some time and if things quieted down, these things would work out fine. And that's why Paulson's idea of this $700 billion fund, which is not sending money to anybody, it's simply sitting there and offering to buy a bunch of these securities. And then taking them and offering to sell them. And if people had a chance to really look at them, there'd be plenty of buyers for them. Now, if you have mortgages and you are worried about them and the government says, well, offer it to us at a fair price and we'll buy it, you start to say, well, if they want to buy it, maybe it's not so bad. And you can create the kind of upward confidence that we've enjoyed for so long. Everybody in the past half a dozen years thought that these things would be worth more, so the system was fine. Now all of a sudden everybody thinks they could be worth less, so the system is terrible. It's turning that around, that the collective psyche of the investment community. And the public says, well, it's just those rich investors. No, this is the public's money. It's your pension fund. It's your 401k. It's your job. It's your government. You know, if we need to build a hospital, we have to be able to get to the credit market. If we need to
and
do things
business,
the same.
If your business can't get loans to keep their business liquid and greased up,
they start
moving,
closing.
They start closing.
And once one
job.
Closes, the next guy closes.
Are you a believer that this bailout or this fund, the $700 billion, could actually turn into a $1 trillion positive for the taxpayer?
I think that's
the
overstating it, but I think it could be. There's no reason to believe that it wouldn't be that you can't make some money out of it. The question is, what will this fund pay you for the mortgage securities you have, and how much would you pay them if you want to buy them back? And the thing that has worried me, I've said this 1,000 times, and we talk about executive compensation. Keep in mind, the companies that have been bailed out by the federal government, all the management lost all their jobs, and all the stockholders lost all of their equity. So there's no bailout in the sense of sending money to people with destroyed value. But in the case of this, how are we going to afford the best mortgage traders in the world to work for the $700 billion fund, which is what it is? Because they're going to be trading against you. And you've been doing this all your life, and you're very good at it, and you get well paid. And that other guy on the other side of the room, he's going to want to buy him. And he's very smart. He's been doing it all his life. So if we put somebody in the middle that doesn't really know what they're doing, how are they going to represent us? And if you have a $700 billion fund, and you were to be able to improve your results by 1%, that's $7 billion.
Hmm.
So, you know, there's an awful lot at stake
here. When we come back, Mr. Mayor, let's talk about how this is going to affect the city of New York and its residents. We will do that as we continue. 20 minutes after 8 o'clock, stick around. Back with the mayor in just a moment.
News Talk and John Gambling on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
All right, it's Mayor Mike and John here at News Talk Radio 710 WOR, and it will be you as well. You get to ask the questions before we finish up. 800-321-0710 if you want to get in line. 800-321-0710. All right, Mr. Mayor, let's continue with where we are in this bailout or non-bailout. We'll have to wait and see. Nobody quite knows.
No, but I will tell you something that this bailout really shows. We got to focus on important things. Do you know what's happening tonight?
Tonight,
the first game of round two of the Women's Basketball League, the New York Liberty, is playing tonight at Madison Square Garden.
All right. The important stuff?
Well, you know, it just goes
it
to show.
It is to the fans.
It is to the fans. It is to the players. It's good for New York. And it just goes to show you that, you know, life still's got to go on.
Exactly so. And a point not to be overlooked, that we talk about this. It starts to get a vibration and a life of its own. And we have roofs over our heads, we have food on our table.
And all kidding aside, there are pockets that people are really suffering, and there are pockets where people are really prospering, and overall, we're pretty good, I think is fair ways to phrase it. If you go outside of New York, the restaurants in the suburbs, from what I've seen when I've eaten there, or what people have told me, they really are starting to feel the economic downturn. When I talk to restaurateurs in New York and the five boroughs, and I ask every place I go, most, not all, but most say they are doing still very well. They're worried that it's going to turn around, but so far they are doing well, and it's because in the city we have the tourists from around the world and around the country that come here. They tend not to go to the suburbs to eat. They tend to stay in the city. Housing prices haven't come down here the way they've come down in other parts of the country because most people, they don't have second homes and they didn't buy homes on spec. And the overbuilding here, while I'm sure there's some, it's nowhere near the kind of craziness that was going on. I was talking the other night to somebody who lives in Madrid, and he said in Spain, Spain's another country, a lot of beach, a lot of vacationers from the rest of Western Europe. It kind economy is a disaster. They have enormous overbuilding and housing prices are crashing. Now, we will have a downturn. I keep saying that and saying that. If you can't get a mortgage and you want to sell your house, you reduce the price. And so, you know, we're going to have some tough times, but not everybody.
All right, let's talk about the city. You have made the announcement this week that you want every agency to continue what they did last year and cut even more from their budgets.
We had, when we passed the budget last June, we acknowledge that we have a balanced budget for 2009, but the projections for 2010. Now, these are fiscal years, so we're 2.5 months into fiscal 09. It's a little complex. You don't think about it that way. The city's budget year starts July 1st. So we are into fiscal 09, even though the calendar, when you look at it, says 08. And after two-thirds month or three-quarters of months into the 12-month fiscal 09, our projections look like they're realistic for a 12% decline in business sales and income tax. Property taxes hold up because they just aren't as volatile. Overall, our tax revenue should be down about 6% because of the stability from the property tax. The state says up 4%, although for a slightly different calendar year. Their fiscal year, I think, might start April 1st. But if you want to look at it exactly comparable basis, to say they think their revenues will be unchanged. We're saying down 12. See, they don't have a property tax, so the 12 is directly comparable. And one of us is very wrong, and I don't think it's going to be us. So we went into this year knowing we had a $2.3 billion deficit. We'd have to address that. I think because of the uncertainties, we have to address that right now. And we are going to look for other revenue sources reduce our expenses. And, you know, I'm going to have to work with every agency. Now, they're all going to say, I can't cut anymore. We're running it perfectly.
Because you've also said no jobs should be lost.
I think that we can economize in every program, find ways to work a little bit harder and do it a little bit more efficiently, and that will let us keep virtually most of the programs certainly the programs that people really need to get help from, and with normal attrition in the workforce. My expectation is that we would not.
So you can contract I'm thinking. Yeah, I mean, I can't fire every 94%.
Keep in mind, we're always closing small agencies and people. We try to find other jobs for them. Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. But in the context of, are we going to go out and lay off big numbers of people? No. And my intent is to protect our workforce, because you need the workforce is the one that's going to do the cuts for us. They're the ones that are going to have to work harder and do things more efficiently. You don't win their loyalty by taking away their jobs. I think they understand that we are not going to be through flush times. Although I got a call from Pat Lynch, the head of the Patrolman's Benevolent Association. That's the big union for the average cop. And then they go to either the detectives union or the sergeants union if they either move up or take a different track. And their new contract, which everybody said we couldn't get, we had a new four-year contract that takes them out into 2010. It was approved barely. 99.4% approval, I think. You wonder what happened. I think it's either 0.4, 0.7. You wonder what those other people were thinking about. But, you know, it just goes to show that if you work together, the press always wants to make a big deal of fighting and that sort of thing. But, you know, in the end, Pat Lynch sat down with the city, and rather than use arbitrators, we came up with a settlement that the city's pleased with and he's pleased with.
I know your crystal balls work sometimes and then sometimes they don't. This slowdown, you're out 18 months. Do you see it 36 months?
I don't think anybody knows. You pick a number. I mean, we're not talking about things turning around overnight. It took a long time to build up to this collapse, and it will take a while to work yourself out of it. The most important thing is that we don't walk away from making investments. We don't walk away from trying new things. We don't walk away from bringing new people here that we need to build our economy. We don't walk away from taking care of those who really need it. We've got to go out there and help others. You know, when we needed help, people came to New York's aid. So, if you know, people need us around this country, hopefully we'll be there for them.
All right. There's more with Mayor Michael Bloomberg as we continue on a Friday John Gambling Show. Hope that you will stick around. It's 8:31. Let's get a news. All right, we continue here on a Friday, 23 before 9 o'clock. We being John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg. I was interested, very interested, to read this morning that Shelley Silver has suggested that a commuter tax, which died back in 99, might be a good idea once again.
Well, you know, we need revenue. Nobody likes taxes. Let's start out with that. Nobody's
jumping. If they could be done without, they would be done without.
Absolutely. But as I said yesterday, surprise, surprise, our teachers, cops, firefighters, everybody wants to get paid. I mean, this should not be a big surprise to you. They have families. They've got to eat, too. And we can't print money, so it's got to come from the taxpayers. You know, I think Shelley's right on this one. I wasn't in government at the time, but it was a terrible mistake getting rid of it. People outside of New York say, why tax me? I'm sympathetic to that, except that they get services in the city and their property values are high because of their proximity to the city. And New York City has been exporting money to all of these other counties throughout the state. And I'm sure, you know, Nassau and Suffolk, Rockland and Westchester, the close ones, will say no, no, no. But in fact, we've done more than our share to help the state. And we've got to get some revenue from someplace.
In a political year, in an election year where the entire legislature is up for election?
Well, that's 5 weeks from now. I assume nothing would happen for 5 weeks.
Do you find it unusual that maybe it was brought up now and not after November 4th?
You know, you'll have to ask
Shelley?
The Speaker.
Okay. Is this congestion pricing under another name?
No, but congestion pricing is different in the following sense. While it is true that the commuters who drive would have to pay with the congestion pricing thing, and those are the people who would be paying a commuter tax, if you took mass transit, you wouldn't pay congestion pricing fees, whereas you'd still be paying the commuter tax. And congestion pricing has, it raises money, but that money would, under our old plan, would be dedicated to improving mass transit. And the objective really with that is to act as a disincentive to drive and to give us the source of revenue we need to expand the options for you that are in everybody's interest. Whereas a commuter tax, it just raises money, which is, we need that as well. But
the separate the city share in that? Does that all go to the city or does it go to the state, a commuter tax?
All money is fungible. So, it's hard to argue any one person's going to get all of anything.
The MTA this week announced that they were thinking, because of shortfalls, of reducing service, possibly. It was all in theory, and it was probably a trial balloon. But I'm thinking to myself, why, when we are trying to encourage everybody to use mass transit, would you even consider, on any level, cutting services?
I don't think they should. I mean, I think, you know, if our economy is slowing down, all the more reason you want to be able to make
Correct.
People get around easy and get to work easy and, you know, generate that, help the economy and generate the business activity and tax revenues and buyers and sellers for everybody else and create jobs.
Do you think that the Speaker's response to the possibility of that commuter tax once again was connected to this and the future monies needed for the MTA?
Well, Shelley's not, you know, listen, Shelley Silver is as knowledgeable about what goes on in this state as anybody. And he certainly knows the need for capital to build mass transit. He knows the need for the state to get revenue to provide their services, and he lives in the city, and he knows the city's needs. He may disagree with others, or others may disagree with him as to how you approach it and what you do, but nobody questions the fact that we don't have any money for capital projects in the MTA, and you will never reduce your expenses with the MTA unless you make intelligent investments which require those capital dollars. So in the end, capital dollars are key. Now, sadly, it takes a while to build things. So if you were going to put in something that would make subways more efficient, let them carry more passengers with the same number of MTA employees, for example.
Which is a switching signal system.
Sure,
that they're trying
let's
to put
assume
in
that worked. Yeah. Fine. You got to have some money to do it, and it is going to take a little bit of time. We could have done it before. Remember the federal government, Mary Peters, the transportation secretary, offered to give the city $354 million to install it, and it would have been in and going. a lot of these things, and we missed it. Now, you can sit around and yell and scream and point fingers and criticize, or you can just get on with it and say, it is what it is. Let's go forward from here. Let's all pull together and not. And I've always thought, look to the future. What's the, I can't change the past. You can't change the past. And why do you want to sit there and get annoyed about the past? Let's just make sure that next time we don't have to look back on a disaster.
An unfortunate situation this week with a man by the name of Inman Morales, who was tasered by the cops and fell off the roof of that shed that he was standing on. At least that's the picture I saw, and died. What is Ray Kelly? What is the commissioner?
I think he's already put out a statement, something to the effect of, he's still doing investigations. So you got to be very careful as to how you phrase it. But it did not look to him like this. I'm trying to phrase this very carefully, and I don't mean
to be
unsympathetic, but during the course of investigation, I don't want to say anything. I think he put out a statement saying it did not appear to be within the guidelines and the recommended practices. And that's all he said, and that's all I can say.
All right, good news that you point out this week, that the continuing reduction in the numbers of homicides here in the city of New York, which has been extraordinary by anybody's measure, is really the motivation in the reduction nationwide of those numbers.
Well, I think it was something like 102 less murders, and we had 100 less during that period.
It's all math.
Yeah, I mean, it's all math. Other places could say, I'm sure other places reduced as well, and they'll say, well, that's not true, it's the rest of us, and you know. But the good news is that there's a reduction, and the better news, because from our own selfish point of view, is that there's been a very big reduction here, and it's a constant battle. You know, you look at these numbers. We're down now to a low level where they go up and down each week, but they've stayed around the base. Last year, I think we had like 490 murders in the whole year. Keep in mind, back in the 70s, at one point, it got up to 2,200 murders.
Any indication from statistics and or history that as economic times get tighter, like we're moving into, that crime changes?
There's all sorts of conventional wisdom. When it rains, the bad guys don't go out, so the murder rate goes down. When it's hot, they get annoyed and they do go out. When you go back and you look at the numbers, nobody can find any real correlation and pattern in those things. Long term, everything you do adds to public safety if you do the right things. And so, you know, you can do the right things and keep crime down in lots of neighborhoods, and then some idiot goes and starts shooting people in another one. That does not mean that all of the things you did weren't the right things to do and that we're not benefiting from it. You have to look at the aggregate. And the aggregate is we have the world's best police department. Kelly is running it the right way. We've put up money, and the cops are getting paid, and they seem 99.4%. They seem happy. They're well led. They're well trained. They're well supplied. There's always going to be problems. You know, our police department costs us $5.5 billion a year. It's 55,000 people. 35,000 of those are uniform. We fight terrorism, or try to prevent terrorism. We practice to, God forbid, something goes wrong, we have to respond. We're out there to serve the people. I talked to last weekend, three cops revived a baby just outside of City Hall. You know, cops do a lot of things. They give people confidence, that crisis of confidence in the financial system. Today, people have confidence in New York City that they're going to be safe. They don't look over their shoulders. And that's not to say there's not crime. It's not to say you shouldn't be taking normal precautions. But the truth of the matter is that you are safe and or safer. And our objective is to make it safer still. Will you ever get to the point where there's no crime whatsoever?
No.
Sadly not.
No.
And the crime typically, incidentally, is very highly correlated with poor education, which is correlated in turn with poverty and lack of opportunity, And, you know, you want to fix these problems. You make sure your police department's doing as good a job as I think they are here, and you keep improving your education system. Joel Klein has said it 1,000 times. He couldn't be more right. People say fix poverty and you'll fix education. Wrong. You fix education, you will fix poverty. If you don't do that, you have no chance.
He said that right here on this program this week when I talked with the chancellor, and I made comment that with the fairly new school year just getting started, he had an enthusiasm in his voice that I hadn't heard in a long time. I've spent, you know, over the last 7 years talking with him at various times, and I think he was as energized as I've heard from him.
Anybody that thinks we haven't made enormous progress in the schools just is either really doesn't understand or they have their own agenda and don't want to see progress and won't give credit where credit is due. Our teachers have done a good job. Klein has done a spectacular job. The measures are with a poster child for how to fix the school system. And we just have to make sure that come June, when Merrill Control of Schools is up for renewal, and they have to pass a law or we go straight back, that they don't pass a law saying Merrill Control and take away Merrill Control. That is the great fear. If you have, if Joel Klein had to run everything by a committee of people who are subject, no matter who appoints them, to the normal political pressures and the newspaper, the constant newspaper articles about them and the attacks on their families or by people, you would never have done any of the things that have really made a difference. You just wouldn't have.
All right, but
what a tragedy if we went back to that.
You're right. We're going to go to the phones here in just a second. Let some folks ask you some questions, but I have to get back to the bailout situation where we are. First, it's a two-part question. I apologize. Taxes.
It's your show. You
property,
don't apologize.
Property taxes, how do you think this whole thing is going to affect those? And two, what happens, in your view, if there is no deal today or this weekend in Washington?
Well, the first thing is we've got to balance the budget. Hopefully, the biggest chunk of savings deficit reduction will come from cutbacks. We probably also have to think very seriously about the 7% decrease in the property tax, which we put in 2 years ago, this past June, re-kept it in, saying we'd have to take a look during the year to see whether or not we could keep it in. And in any case, our $2.3 billion deficit next year assumes that it goes away. So we're talking about it going up in June regardless. The question is, should you do it a little bit earlier? The other thing is much more serious. If they were to not, in Washington, come to an agreement, it's inconceivable, incidentally, that they can't, because the world is shutting down. I mean, you would literally have the banks closing their doors. You would have businesses.
Come Monday, I mean.
Very close. I mean, businesses, small businesses, just a lot of them close. They just can't borrow money. You know,
people say you're crying wolf.
Yeah, well, if you work in the automobile business, you want to go find out, I'll tell you, nobody's going to buy a car if they can't finance it. Your kid's not going to be able to get a college education. It is. I don't think anybody rationally says that it's not going. Wouldn't be a calamity. You can argue about whether or not, because we got in this situation, we should let pure, unbridled capitalism take us through the calamity, and we'll come out better than ever on the other side. Be an awful lot of casualties between here and there. You can't close down society. I'm saving Freddie and Fannie, for example. You would have literally stopped mortgage issuance in this country. And overnight, construction workers are all out of jobs. Overnight, nobody can sell their house if they need the money for something else. No family can buy it because everybody gets a mortgage. That's just not viable. Now, a separate issue. Why are we in this situation? And that, listen, you and I have talked about that all the time. Spending money we don't have, and the health costs that aren't giving us the results we want, and they're killing us, and an immigration policy that is national suicide. And no energy policy. Stop me when you get bored. I mean, we've ad nauseum.
All right, Mr. Mayor, hang on. We've got a bunch of folks that want to ask you a question. We will get to them as we continue. It's 9 minutes before 6 minutes now before 9 o'clock. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, before we get to the phones, real fast, there's been some movement on the WTC.
Well, I had a conversation yesterday with Governor Patterson and with Chris Ward, who's the executive director of the Port Authority, and we all agree that the critical thing is that we have to have, on the 10th anniversary of 9/11, the memorial built with people being able to get to it, the platform, the water cascading down, the trees, the names. Museum underground can take a little bit longer, and it will just because of the complexity of the problem.
They tell you they can do it?
The Port Authority understands they've got to do it. Isn't the right word. It will be done. Chris understands it, and he is a very competent guy. The city, the governor and I have both said to him, we want the port to guarantee any cost overruns over that, because otherwise you don't have any confidence they will. But you have to give them an economic incentive,
right,
if you're capitalist,
right,
to do it.
Yep.
And Chris understands that, and we'll get a letter from them, I'm sure, telling them to do that. But we've got to do that. Then we got to finish the building of everything else. And, you know, if you go there, you wonder what everybody's yelling and screaming about, because there's no room for anybody. There's so many construction workers.
Listen, we live in that backyard, and it is amazing to see what's going up.
It is going up, and the Deutsche Bank building is coming down. We've got to get rid of the LMDC to get one little extra bureaucracy out. I mean, there's some things to do, and the economy is going to help in the lowering construction prices, but it's not going to help in looking for tenants for those buildings. But, you know, you build a building today, you start in the ground today, 5 years before you get it done, you're going to have a heck of a good building available at exactly the right time. I think they're great investments today.
Grab your headphone right there and listen up. I got Rich on Staten Island. What's your question for the mayor, Rich?
A quick statement, too. I can't wait to feel like Michael Bloomberg next week when the bailout's official, because I'll be a shareholder in a lot of companies.
I will not be, but I got a job here.
What's your question?
I hope you do. The 14th Amendment to the Constitution allows that if you're a naturalized citizen when you're born in the United States, a lot of illegal aliens have abused that. And on Staten Island, the public schools are being overcrowded. I don't know if you've been to an emergency room. They're overcrowded. Rikers Island, the correction officer friend of mine, said,
what's the question?
They're overcrowded. The question is, who's going to continue to pay for this? Because I'm a taxpayer. For some reason, I'm the only one on Staten Island whose assessment went up last year.
All right. Well,
I don't know about the assessment, but I guess it means you have a nice house. And it's a great place to live. And property values actually in Staten Island, John, are doing okay.
Pretty strong.
Yeah, I mean, they're still going to have problems with everybody else. Rich, if you take a look at the real economics, and there's always aberrations, but undocumented in this country, it's certainly let me rephrase that, in New York, because that's what I know about for sure, they have relatively low crime rate because they don't want to go near the government. They have a very low unemployment rate because they come here to work, and they tend to work very hard, having multiple jobs and taking jobs that nobody else seems to be willing to take. A lot of them, about 75%, pay taxes. And it's interesting. Their employer doesn't want to go to jail, so the employer withholds and sends in the tax receipts. But they don't get any rebates or the EITC. Because the government can't find them, if you will. They tend not to use very many medical services, which is in some senses sad, because when they do, they have more serious problems. But you see them in the emergency rooms because they don't have doctors, but very little preventive care long term. They'd be better off if they were part of our society and had green cards and could get insurance and that sort of thing. Their kids do go to school, but they don't have that many kids. They tend to have smaller families because a lot of them, on average, a lot of them, just the mail comes here to work and sends the money back home. And on balance, Rich, you know, these people contribute a lot more than they cost. They cost you something, yes, but you do get a lot.
All right, you got another one here?
Jim in Westport.
Jim in Westport, you've got the mayor. Go real fast.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. I understand, I think, the logic of the bailout in which the public is buying illiquid, deep discounted assets because of mark-to-market issues.
Yep.
What I don't understand is why we're not talking about holding these portfolios to maturity.
You could do that, although I think the government just doesn't want to be in the business, Jim, but you're exactly right. And these things all have value. The problem is not that they are bad securities. The problem is we can't value them. And it's a logistical argument. If you can't value them, the banks, people say, well, I don't know what's really on your books, so I don't want to put my money there in case they're bad. If you got them out of the banks into a fund where we could provide disclosure, everybody would see what they are, we could do the modeling, we could show what they're worth, then I think you'll have a lot of buyers. Jim's point of holding it to maturity, the only argument against it, Jim, really is we're not in that business. If you could sell them short term, and hopefully the people you sell them to will make money, that's why they're buying them. But you want to make sure that the government makes some money, or at least doesn't lose a lot in the meantime. And what it does really is it frees up the seller's portfolio so they can go make new loans.
If you were asked to be part of the oversight, would you? Yes or no?
I would be happy to give them advice, but I've got a job working for the people of the city of New York. I think it's the greatest job in the world, and I have 460-something days. I'm going to do it.
All right. Well, we'll talk with you next Friday after a few more of those have been crossed out on the calendar. Have yourself a good weekend.
And
stay dry.
Drive carefully. A lot of rain.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, as always. Mayor Michael Bloomberg with John Gambling and you.